Good morning, everybody. Thank you for having me as a guest in your church. And as I was introduced, my name is Peter McMullen. Currently, I am the director at the Lighthouse Mission in downtown, 669 Main Street. Some of you may be familiar with it. As you drive down Main Street, just past Portage and Main, you may see a lot of folks hanging out on the street and getting lunch, or they're usually coming into the Lighthouse around lunchtime or for morning breakfast. So I am the director. I've been was appointed the director in January. That's the we'll get a little bit into my story as to how I became the director at the Lighthouse Mission, but that's currently what I'm doing. Before I get into sharing about my journey, I'd just like to let you know a little bit about the Lighthouse Mission itself. The Lighthouse Mission has been in Winnipeg. It has been here for 111 years now. Originally, the Lighthouse Mission started out as a church. It was just a regular church, but when the Great Depression happened in the 30s, they found it necessary for it to become a soup kitchen. There was a lot of people losing their jobs. There was a lot of people in dire straits. So at that point, it became a soup kitchen and has remained that way ever since. It's gone through a few different locations, but where we are at Main Street right now, we've been there since the mid-70s. And what a day looks like at the Lighthouse Mission for our guests who come in, we will serve breakfast in the morning. We'll have our guys, we have a crew of guys that are involved. They're from the Adult and Teen Challenge Men's Program. It's a Christian program that's in place for people who are struggling with life-controlling issues in their, whether it be addictions of different types, anger issues, other things that they're in bondage to that keep them away from a normal and a happy life. So they will enroll at the Adult and Teen Challenge program and through Christ seek freedom from the bondage they're experiencing. Now, these gentlemen, every morning we get there at 7:30 and we will get prepared for our day. 9 a.m., we open our doors to our guests and we're happy to serve them till 11:15, serve them breakfast. It's really great. We're able to serve about 250 to 300 hot breakfasts every morning, along with coffee, juice, real juice, not Tang or anything, and any other donations for food we have. So we really make an impact on the hunger that's in downtown Winnipeg. In the afternoon, we'll close up, and then in the afternoon at 1 o'clock, the Lighthouse Mission will again serve. We have a cook there. His name's Sasha. He's a graduate from the Adult and Teen Challenge Men's Program as well. I'll talk a little bit more about that later. He makes fresh soup every day. It's the best soup in Winnipeg. I challenge anybody to go to a restaurant and find a better soup than what we make. It's made with fresh meat, whether it be, if we're making a chicken soup, it isn't pieces of chicken. He'll actually roast the chickens in the oven. Then he'll take the chickens, he'll pull them all apart, he'll take all of the juice, and that goes in as the soup base. Along with all the produce, we receive the fresh produce, he'll chop it, we'll chop it when it comes in, and all fresh ingredients go in the soup. So we get to serve about 350 of those every afternoon, most nutritious and delicious soup in town. Along with that, we'll do 400 sandwiches, and whatever fruit we receive as donations, along with coffee and water again. That's what we do from Monday to Thursday, and that's about 800 coffees every day as well. So we're fortunate enough to give anybody as many fresh coffees as they want in a day. Thursdays, it's a little bit more of a special day for us. Fridays, we have what's called chili in church. So we'll show up around lunchtime on Friday, and we will start a chili. We'll make a huge pot of chili. Again, our pot only, as you can, you're hearing this magic number of 350. It'll only hold about 350 12-ounce servings. So we'll make chili, and our guests absolutely love it. So we have churches, and you guys are welcome to come down. It's something we can talk about in the future. But churches will come down. They'll participate. They'll help serve our guests. If they want to put on worship for our guests while they're enjoying their chili, and even share a message. So we have what's called chili in church, where they get to really meet Christ and enjoy their evening. The folks that we serve in the downtown area, again, are largely homeless or near homelessness. They're either they may be living in one of the unfortunately run-down hotels in downtown Winnipeg, the Bell Hotel, the Manwin. They'll be staying there for a monthly amount, and they don't have a kitchen. They don't have a fridge. They might have a small fridge or a microwave, so they come down and get their food from us on a regular basis. A lot of folks in the overnight shelters, whether it be Union Gospel Mission, which isn't overnight shelter, but a lot of their residents come see us, the Salvation Army, Main Street Project overnight shelters, and there's a newer shelter on Disraeli. They call it 190, and it has about 100 to 200 guests every night, and they'll come and they'll see us every day. These folks, they don't only come in to get the basics of life, which would be food and oftentimes clothing when we have it to offer, or hygiene products. They come in to seek fellowship with one another, seek fellowship with us, and to also just find a place where they can, the best expression and description I can use is take their street off. They have to live on the street in a very protected way, a very paranoid way. And when they come in, I equate it to, say, a police officer. If he goes home after work and he's wearing his full body armor, he gets home, he can take off his body armor and he can hang it up and he can sit down with his family and have a little bit of peace and comfort after a long day of doing what he has to do that is in terrible risk. So we get to see that. When people come in our front door, they get to take their street off. They become a little bit more vulnerable. And it's a wonderful, because we can just sit down with them and ask what's going on in their day. It's so important, because a lot of our guests at the Lighthouse Mission who come down, they spend a real life of anonymity. They'll walk down the street and people will do their best to avert their gaze, to maybe go the other way, to go to the other side of the sidewalk. Because maybe they're a little nervous, or maybe they just don't want to be having to think about that. So they're really, a lot of these folks, they're really not known. They walk as almost ghosts sometime down the street. So when they come in and they get to sit down with us, you just sit down and say, "Hey, Joe, what's going on today?" And all we have to do is listen. Because, like I say, they're not talking to a lot of folks. They may be to each other, but they spend, as they go about, really anonymous. So they come in, and we get to talk to them and hear their story. Because everything is about the story, whether it be my story or their story, and how God works in our lives. And for those they don't feel God is working in their life yet, this is the place where we can let them know, well, if you look at this, and if you maybe think about it this way, this is where God is. This is where He's working in your life. Slowly by slowly, we can get them introduced to an open heart to maybe receive what God has to offer us. So that's who we serve on a daily basis. That is what we serve on a daily basis. And that is our hours of operation. So that is the Lighthouse Mission. Now, my story on how I got there, it can really tie into how all of us at the Lighthouse serve our guests. Personally, I grew up in a small town, and I was born and baptized Catholic. I went to church obediently. I went to First Communion. I was baptized. I did all of the Catholic things that needed to get done. And from my understanding of where God and Jesus was in my life was that you go to church, you do your responsibilities, you say your three Hail Marys, your One Our Father, and you let the priest take care of the rest, and it all should be good from there. So it was really, it's not a personal relationship, which we all need to have with Christ. So as I grew up, I had a pretty normal life. I did lose my father at a very young age, and when I was 4 and a half. Stepfather came into my life when I was 10, but I was never in want for anything. We weren't a wealthy family by any stretch of the means, but I was able to get through school successfully. I was actually the top graduating student in my high school. I was able to go to university for a couple of years, but I couldn't afford to stay there. So as I was going, I was always a hard worker. I grew up with that ethic. I grew up with knowing what was right and what was wrong. And I just went to university, I got a job, I started going through careers. And just before I was 40, in 2004, I ended up in a career as a financial planner. I actually was pretty successful at what I did. I had my own business and I did that for 8 years. But in there, something happened in my life. Something happens in all our lives, but how we deal with that is always going to be entirely up to us, and a lot of to do with how our foundation has been set. And for me, when I was younger, I went to university, I became a bit of a social drinker. And I really enjoyed actually, going out with the folks, having a few beers and all that stuff. But I would always go just a little bit too far. And then when I was 40 years old, I came across a pretty scary circumstance in my life. I went in, I had bronchitis one night, and one night, and the next day I decided I was going to go down to the doctor because it felt like it was something a little bit more. I could hear crackling in my lungs, and I'd never had that before. So I go into the doctor, and the doctor says to me, it's his bronchitis. And I says, well, this is different. It doesn't seem right. He says, well, okay, fine, I'll do an x-ray and we'll check it and we'll see what's going on. So he does his x-ray. 10 minutes later, I go in and he says, no, it's fine, it's just bronchitis. Take your antibiotics and you'll be fine. That was a Thursday, I remember this so clearly. The Monday, I get a phone call from the doctor's office and they say, Peter, can you come down to the doctor's office maybe tomorrow morning? And he says, why do I have to come down to the doctor's office I was just in? He says, well, we can't really talk about that. And I says, well, what do you mean? You have to give me some sort of indication. He says, well, the radiologist looked at your x-rays. He sees something. You need to come down and see us. And I felt all the blood rush out of my face, felt my heart sink. Here I am, father of 2 young kids under 3 years old. I have my own business. And the nature of my business, everything I got was 100% commission earned. And my wife wasn't working. And I was fairly new in my business. And I saw my life flash before my eyes. What have they found in this x-ray? Says, I won't come down tomorrow, but get me in this afternoon. I have to know what's happening. So they did. And the first words out of their mouth are, you have spots on both your lungs. And where they are and what they look like, it could be cancer. It was the scariest day of my life. And over the next 2-3 weeks, thank you, Lord, they ruled out that it was cancer, but they found out it was another potentially life-threatening condition called sarcoidosis. So this they had to monitor. They had to see if it was progressing, what was going on, to determine if they were going to do treatments, if it was going to be a biopsy, and all of these things. So at that point, being a commission-only job, knowing that in my next pay period on the 15th, that I hadn't done any business last week, and right now, because of this distraction I'm going through, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do business to get the next paycheck on the 30th or even the 15th after that, the world starts to roll in my head. The world. And that's the key thing. The world is rolling in my head. So at first, I couldn't sleep. So I had to remedy that. So I had a few drinks before I went to bed. That carried on for a while. Then I would wake up at 3 a.m. and there's the world again. Yelling at me, screaming at me. You're going to lose your house. You're not going to be able to pay those bills. There's going to be bill collectors. Your kids are going to end up in trouble because of this situation. So 3 a.m, I didn't want those thoughts because I knew I couldn't get up in the morning. Let's have a drink. So at 3 a.m, I started to drink. Eventually that got to 8 a.m. I got up and I was shaking. I had to have a drink. Well, without going too much further into it, let's just say I entered into about an 8-year battle with alcohol. A horrible battle. Took everything I have. I did everything I could. I was a hard worker. I thought I was a fairly smart guy. So I went to psychiatrists. I went to psychologists. I went to St. Raphael's Wellness. I was in Union Gospel Mission. I was in detox a number of times, Addictions Foundation of Manitoba. I didn't deny that I had a problem. I knew I had a problem. And I fought it and I fought it. But I was in such bondage to alcohol. I can look back now and I can see alcohol was a person in my life. It told me what to do every day. Fear of going into alcohol withdrawal again. All of these things that happened. Fear of the number of threats of divorce that came my way. Actually ending up on the street myself. Getting kicked out of my house. Actually ending up in jail. Fortunately, I don't have a criminal record, but at the point, I was so desperate that I ended up in trouble with the police, and they just told me, you can't drink until this is sorted out. And of course, you're an alcoholic. And the judge even said after the fact, he says, they should never do that to alcoholics because they're going to drink. I ended up in jail. None of my family, none of my brothers, my sisters, my wife, nobody would bail me out of jail. So I ended up in jail for 3 months. Because nobody was going to bail me out. So I got through those legal matters, and I was able to get out of jail and try to start a new life. So this is at one point where I went to Union Gospel Mission. And then a friend of mine named Scott, while I was at Union Gospel Mission, I needed to move on from there. He came into my life. We'll get a little more into that story. Scott Hanford here in your church. We were neighbors at one point when my whole alcoholism started. And he welcomed me. Scott and Holly welcomed me into their home. And I stayed there for a brief period. But my addiction came roaring back and was back in my life. Ended up back on the street again. And this is where everything starts to turn. I finally made the decision, what everybody had recommended, to go to Adult and Teen Challenge. This program, as I mentioned, is for people who struggle with addictions, and it is a Christ-centered program. Through this program, within the first month, I learned a little bit about being baptized and going to church and having your priest take care of it wasn't the way. The way is having Christ, having the Holy Spirit, having these things in your life every day, recognizing it. I was challenged. It was a month and a half into the program, and one of the leaders said, how's it going, Peter? And he says, well, it's not going good. My wife has decided the house we've been in for 20 years, she needs to sell it. She can't do it without me. There's no income. And I said, well, this is terrible. What am I going to do? He says, well, I have to go home because I have to fix the water heater. I have to do the fence. I have to do this because she's going to lose all this money if I don't take charge, if I don't go home and I take care of these things. And he just said to me, whoa, whoa, whoa. He doesn't even know. I told him 2 years after about this conversation. He didn't realize the power. He says, whoa, wait a second. He says, do you believe in God? And I says, well, yeah, of course I believe in God. He says, do you think he's a good God? And he says, well, yeah, but that's what God is. And he says, do you think he loves you? Yeah, this was a good question. I says, well, I hope so. I really don't know, but I hope so. And do you think he loves your family? Absolutely, I say, without question, he loves my wife and my daughters. And you think he wants to take care of them? I says, absolutely, without question. And he says, well, then, whoa, stop. Let him. And I kind of went back and I'm like, okay. This, to me, was the scariest point in my life. While I was in jail, while I was going through alcohol withdrawal, all of these things in my life, even when I was a kid, when nothing was going right, and I felt desperate, I always had a flicker of hope in my life. I can recognize that now as God and Jesus in my life. But at the time, I didn't know. I just knew that things were going to be okay. Things were going to turn around. That was God whispering in my ear. But here, it was given to me by this man. He said, let him. And I says, wow. I'd almost rather go on the street again and have the hope that things are going to turn around than if right now I give my life to God and step back and let go of the wheel, that God, you're going to take it. Because the fear is, what if he does not show up in my life? That last little flicker, I can remember it as I was sitting in the top bunk of a jail and guys were poking saying horrible things at me about my wife and about my family. And this is my first night in jail. I knew things were going to turn around, but that little, I know things are going to be okay. I'm about to give it up. And if God doesn't show up now when I ask him to come into my life, then I will have nothing. That was the scariest moment of my life, was actually saying, God, I'm going to trust you. Here's my life. Here's my family. I know I can't do this. I tried for the last 8 years on my power, my worldly knowledge, my experience, all these things I had, and I could not do it. But here it is. The trust fall, as they call it. And I'll tell you, the first way he spoke to me was through antiperspirant. Kind of a funny story, but when you're in the Adult and Teen Challenge program, it's such a strict program that if you need anything, you're not allowed to leave the program, you're not allowed to leave the building, you're under 24-hour care, you're allowed 2 15-minute phone calls a week, you have to be obedient to all the rules, and if you need something like antiperspirant, you have to fill out a request. It has to go to the director. The director has to review the request. He has to approve it. And requests are only reviewed once a week on Fridays. So then by the next midweek, you should have an answer. And then at that point, they have to figure out how they're going to go to the store and buy you antiperspirant. They had lots of deodorant, but I'm allergic to it, so I couldn't get it. So I'm thinking, okay, here we go. Well, that Sunday morning where God spoke to me, I made a joke. I says, God, I've just given you my life. I remember I was even in the shower, and I says, I got to go to church right away, and I don't have any antiperspirant. He says, tell you what, you want to show up in my life? Show up with antiperspirant. And that day, we went to church. I didn't have antiperspirant. But all of the guys were going out on a, I can't remember, all the guys in the program were going out to an event, and I chose to stay back because I had the option to stay back. And I think there was going to be a hockey game. And I just wanted some time by myself to watch a hockey game. Well, one of the guys in the office, the same guy that challenged me to trust God, he was going back and forth and back and forth. He says, well, Anthony, what are you doing? He says, well, I'm installing a TV in the director's office. I says, well, do you need a hand? He says, because, you know, I used to work at Rona, and I am pretty handy. I know these things. He says, sure, come on down. So we go down, we're looking at it, and he says, you don't have the right stuff for this type of wall. He says, but I know on aisle 15 in Rona where you can get the things you're going to need. He says, fine, let's go. So he gets me to jump in his vehicle. We're driving down. We go to Rona. We turn around. We're coming back on Ellis. And we just get over the tracks in Ellis heading towards downtown Winnipeg. And he says, there's Dollarama. You need anything there? You know what? I have $5 in my pocket. I never have money in my pocket. They're only allowed $10 a week. I had $5 left over. So sure, I could go get a few things. So I go in. I go in and I grab the antiperspirant, not even thinking. And I go and jump in the car. And I think I picked up some gummy bears and some other things, you know, real treats. And I open the bag and I look it up. And I says, Anthony, look, this is great antiperspirant. Smell that. And I looked at the antiperspirant. And this is 3 hours after I prayed to God. He put antiperspirant in my hands. Now, this sounds really trivial, but if you know the Adult and Teen Challenge program, you'll know that our God, fortunately, with me, had a sense of humor. I challenged him, and he actually answered it within 3 hours. There's bigger ways that God moved in my life, but for me, that was the single confirmation that I needed. It was the single one where I actually felt that flicker of hope burst into a giant flame. I knew God was in my life. Through that, I carried on. The reason for my alcoholism was anxiety. I remember 6 months into the program, one of my 15-minute phone calls, I phoned my wife. And she says, you know, I have to talk to you. And I says, okay. She says, you know, it's 6 months and you're in the program. And I was in tears for the first month, so thankful you were in the program when you first went in. She says, but then after that, the next couple of months, we were able to come home to a normal house. No fear of you drinking, no fear of finding you passed out on the floor, all of these things. And you know what? I want you to do well in the program. I want you to succeed in the program. But I don't know if I could ever go back to that. The fear of that fear again, it is gone right now, and I don't know that I could ever go back. I felt my anxiety reaction that drove me to drink. I was sick to my stomach. I was almost ready to throw up in the garbage can. Panic. I says, no, you can't do that. And I just stopped, and I remembered Philippians 4:8, 4:6, 4:7, 4:8. Go through all the way through there, and it talks about how your anxieties, be anxious for nothing. And that was the scripture that I relied on. And for the first time in my life, I averted what would normally be a 16, 18-hour panic attack within seconds. And I went, and I heard God say to me, he says, Peter, this isn't about you. Think about your family. Think about what's happening in their lives. Think about what will be good for them. And I says, you know what? I can't do this to her anymore. I've been doing this long enough. And I says, okay, I understand. He says, but thank you. He says, I'm not going to do anything right now while you're in the program. I'm going to wait for you to finish the program. But then we'll talk come October. And I says, that's fine. I understand. And at that point, I truly gave it to God. Well, October rolls around. I'm finished my program. Instead of the divorce papers I was expecting, we had our 20th wedding anniversary. October the 23rd. This week actually, we're moving into a new place together for the first time. The past 3 years, I've been working in Adult and Teen Challenge, staying there, and she's in the condo where she took the proceeds from her house sale, and she's actually bought the condo, and we've been working slowly on our relationship. And she's now finally got to the point where she says, okay, I can do this again. So we're moving in together on the 22nd of this month. So this is all 100% thanks to Jesus. But the journey that I had through Teen Challenge, learning to deal with these things and actually giving this to God in a true way. People will say, give it to God. And you can give it to God and say, I don't want this, Lord. Take it. You know what? You say, cast your burdens. Well, here they are. Now, that's giving it to him in frustration. But I learned through this experience to say to God, God, you've proven to me. This isn't intellectual. This isn't from my head. This isn't from what Scripture tells me. This is through experience. This is through your evidence in my life. God, here is my burden. Here is my problem. I know you love me. I'm giving it to you. And I know you will do something with it, Lord. And that's giving it to God in my life, is knowing that it's going to get dealt with. And no matter what, he feeds the sparrows and he clothes the lilies. I mean, he does everything that needs to happen. Why doesn't he do that for us, as Scripture says? And he does it for me every day. I don't listen to the noise of the world anymore. I hear God. In that trust in the Lord and giving it to him, the story that I can share with those folks that we meet every day at the Lighthouse Mission. I used to be on the same side of the table as them. They'll come in, they'll be asking for a sandwich. And just to give you a perspective of the folks that we get to serve every day. First thing that we know is that, and this is where our hearts have to be set every day, and this is through Christ, is that not a single person who walks through our door wants to be walking through our doors. They're walking through our doors because they have to. When I was 2 months into the program, I had the pleasure of serving at the Lighthouse, and I remember a girl coming up to me, and she says, you know, can I have some sandwiches, please? And I said, sorry, I couldn't hear you. And she says, can I have some sandwiches, please? I says, I'm sorry, I really couldn't hear you. She just looked at me, and she burst into tears. She turned around, and she walked out. And I said to the next guy, I says, I could not hear what she said. What did she say? I don't understand. She said, can I have some sandwiches, please? And, oh, my heart's broken. Because these folks are coming in, and the position they're in to have to come in and ask, it's the shame they must, a lot of people must feel, saying, I can't do this myself. I need you to do this for me. I read in a book, and it was on charity, and I think it was Assisi. Francis of Assisi, and he said the response, or it could be Thomas, I can't remember, it's years ago, but the responsibility of the person in charity is when they're giving or doing the charitable act. Number one, they must do it from their firsts and not their lasts. But the second thing is they need to ask the forgiveness of the person they are giving charity to. And I saw that in live action, this poor gal. She was hungry. I made her ask me twice and was trying for a third time. I wasn't doing it on purpose, but that is the pain she felt. So we get to help these people every day, and we have to sit down and put our days aside. I say to the students when they come in part of the orientation, if you haven't died to yourself already when you got out of bed this morning, it says, die now. He says, because you are here. You're not here to serve a sandwich or to pour a coffee. It says, you are here to serve an individual. You're here to make somebody's day better. He says, you do what you can to help this person. So we all sit down and we go in with this heart where it's, we want to help you. We're offering. This is what we have. What do you need? Is there anything more we can do? And all of these guys are just fantastic. They all learn to love everybody. When they come in and put their street off, we know everybody by their first name they come in. We never have trouble. Actually, we had two break-ins. One was because the door was left open, and I had to go through the cameras at night. What they did? They went into our clothing side where we distribute clothing. They moved the clothing racks to the door. They opened the doors, and they were handing out clothes at the door to other members of the street off hours. They didn't steal a single thing. We had a projector system. We had an Apple TV. We had all of this stuff. We had a PA system, a Fender, so we can do our worship. They didn't take any of that stuff because they know that they see and experience the hands and feet of Christ every day. So in my journey, going through the Adult and Teen Challenge program, I was fortunate enough that I was able to go into what's called the Surge program. Because when I went through the program and I finished it and I saw what Christ could do, I said, I need to be involved in this because I can't handle the fact that somebody's going to go through an 8-year fight with alcoholism and really not know that there is truly an answer through Christ and through this program. So I went into the leadership program. I had no desire to go back to the financial services industry. 18-month course, you have different jobs you do as you're going through your leadership. In my last 6 months, I was actually driving truck for the thrift store for Adult and Teen Challenge. And Daniel says to me, he says, Peter, what do you think about managing at the Lighthouse? And at the time, I'm like, I don't know, you tell me what I think about managing at the Lighthouse. It's never even crossed my mind. He says, well, we need somebody there now. Would you be able to take this from us? And I did, and I had no idea. No idea it was going to be my dream job, where I'm going to end my life. It's the most amazing thing. From there, I managed. I got, I did what I could. I got the services all standardized, everything they were looking for. And then in January, they appointed me the director, which is great. But now I'm here for the rest of my life at the Lighthouse Mission. I do want to go to a couple of important things before I close out. When I talked to the guys at the Lighthouse, to recenter them in what they need to do, I share with them, okay, your heart has two things in it, and I heard this speaker say this once, your heart has two things. One is all the instructions for life by God. All of the God's scriptures written on your heart. It's always at access. You just need to want it. But he says, the second thing is, the seed for every sin known to mankind. That is how, because of our sinful nature, we are wired. The question is, how do we open this heart? And a lot of the guys that come in, they'll be talking about all the fruits of the Spirit, the kindness, the generosity. And I says, no. Start with the simple gospel message. Christ came to this earth. He didn't come here to lead. He came here to serve. I says, start with the hands and feet of Christ. On one site, we have the hands and feet of Christ, the servant, the love of Christ. And on the other side, we have our relationship with God, the trust that I talked about how I gave him, the belief in him, and the praise for him, and just giving him all our heart.
effect.
It says, after that, all of the other things will flush out in your life. And at the end, they will end in the fruits of the Spirit. All of these great things that you want to be doing. You want to be doing the praying. You want to be doing the healing. You want to speak in tongues. It says, those are all things that will come to you if God wants you to have them. But you have to start at the hands and feet of Christ. And the guys know that the simple gospel message of what, I hate saying the cliche, but what would Jesus do, is what we need to do every single day. God's grace, His love, His mercy, and this is a part a lot of people forget, are His blessings. I'm a man of word pictures, and I say to them, they are continually pouring down on us. It's like a monsoon. If you ever see a monsoon, it just comes down and it comes down and it comes down and it's relentless. It says that's what God has for us. But that is grace, mercy, love, forgiveness, blessings, all of these things coming to us. And it says if we want to get caught in all the details of the world, as they say, the devil's in the details, we want all of that to start impacting our life. We want all of that to start impacting the decisions we're going to make, whether we're going to talk about Trump, whether we're going to talk about supporting a Republican government because we think it is, you know, Christian and all these other... No, forget all that noise. Go back to the simple gospel message. When we start getting caught up in all these details, it's like we take the umbrella out and we put it up. God loves us. He's still pouring that monsoon rain on us. It will never, ever stop. But when we let our life get into the control, when we have to have control of things, we're just stopping ourselves from receiving what God has to give. So the guys there every day, they understand this message that you don't need to control things. You do need to trust God. And every day that you give Him that trust, for when you are weak, He is strong. I cannot do this. God, please do it for me. He just beams in. His power in your life will become stronger and stronger and stronger. I share it with the guys, and thankfully, this is one of the true blessings I have, is these students that are in the program working towards their freedom in Christ. I get to share with them, and then they get to share it with the people at the Lighthouse Mission. So that is the heart of who we are. That is how my journey brought me to the director at the Lighthouse Mission, and this is how we get to have everybody understand what Christ can do in this world. I do want to share a little bit about what's happening. This I haven't talked about. As you know, I have a history in addiction, and through the Adult and Teen Challenge program, people, the last thing we cannot offer when they come in off the street is they say, Peter, I'm in my addiction. I got to get free of this. And I know this for a fact, what they're about to go through. They're about to lose their last bottle of alcohol. They're about to go into withdrawals. And they say, help me, please. And I says, I can get you into program. But every program here needs a detox. You have to go to a 2-week detox to be safely off of your drug of choice so that you can enter into this program. Well, I phoned the Main Street Project, where is the number one source for detoxification in Winnipeg and in Manitoba. And they say, Peter, yeah, we'll put them on the list. That's 3, 4, 5, typically 6 or 7 weeks. This person looks at me with the heartbreak and they say, I can't do it. I know that in 2 days, I'm going to be going through alcohol withdrawals. All the physical pain is going to be overwhelming. All of the emotional pain that goes with that is going to be times 1,000. I'm sorry, but now that I'm coming in here to find clothing, I'm coming in here to find food, and after this, I'm going to go out and try to find shelter, I have to add to my priority list going to find some alcohol because I can't handle that. So by the time, even if we did put them on the list, that 5 weeks rolls around, their number comes up, I call. And he says, John, this is, you got a bed. You can go and do this now. And he says, no, I'm okay now. He's got some money in his pocket. He's drunk, or he's got whatever he wants. He feels pretty good about things. We've lost that opportunity to help somebody change their life and the need to come through our doors in the first place. So what we're doing is we have a building next door. We've had it since the 80s. They bought it at a song. We've already developed the bottom level into a daytime drop-in shelter. And the second and third floors of this old building, we're putting in detox space. We're going to be able to to bring people off of the street. They're going to come right in. They're going to say, I want to get free from this. We're going to be able to bring up to 10 people inside the Lighthouse Mission, put them on the detox. And what is missing in the city is when you're in that detox is to be able to say, the folks that take you in, they'll take care of you. They give you meals. They give you beds. They give you comfort. Everything you need. But they don't have a desire to help you change their life. Maybe they want to see your life changed, but they are so focused on task of just getting you detoxed. And then after that, off you go. Well, we're going to take these folks when they come in. We're going to talk about the long-term programs that are available. We are already friends with Silo Mission. We are friends with Main Street Project. We are friends with Union Gospel Mission. We're all together as a team now. Riverwood House is a new facility opening up. And we're going to take those people when they're in detox, and we're going to say, this is what it could look like. This is how your life can change. And we're going to bring them over to the Adult and Teen Challenges, to the Union Gospel Missions. We're going to sit them down for a meal with the guys that are in recovery and in the programs. And we're going to say, go ahead, ask them some questions what it's about. So they're going to get to see. They're going to get to do interviews. They're going to find out what they're going into. But we are going to be desperate where they cannot be. They can be desperate for shelter. They can be desperate for food. They can be desperate for their addiction. But it's really hard to throw on that task. Okay, I'm going to try to navigate my way into a long-term program. That's just not in their wheelhouse. So that's where we want to take that. We want to be desperate on their behalf. So you'll probably be hearing something in the news in the next little while. We are currently in a capital campaign to raise funds for our detox. But I will close with this note. My roots are strongest, believe it or not, in this church. I've only ever been here twice. But through the care and compassion of Scott and Holly, when I needed help, they took me into their home. Unfortunately, I could not bust free of my addiction in their home, but I was completely floored. This was before I came to Christ at Teen Challenge. I could not understand how somebody could take me into their home knowing that I'm struggling with addiction and give me that love and care. And they did. And while I was there, Walter and Chris, I was in a really desperate position. I think you guys were going to the beach that day or something like that, and they invited me to go. I can't remember the details. I just remember sitting on their back porch in a lawn chair, and they asked if they could pray for me. And Walter and Chris came, and they prayed for me, and I felt Jesus. I was overwhelmed. I was in tears. And at this point, through this church, through Scott and Holly, through Walter and Chris, and through what Christ does in this church, I am proud to say that my roots, whether or not you've seen me before, heard of me, or even know of me, are in this church. So just want you all to know that no matter who you're speaking to, who you're encountering in your day, when we let the love of Christ come through our hearts, you never know whose life you're going to touch and whose life you're going to change. So thank you, everybody, for your time today. And if you do want to support the Lighthouse Mission, there are some brochures. We have a website, lighthousemission.ca. You can learn to donate on there. And there's also some newsletters. But thank you for your time. I'm sorry for going a little long. Have a great day.